I'm Fred Matt, president of FX Matt Brewing Company in Utica, New York. We've been around for 135 years for some of those youngins out there. One thing I will say that this can be part of the discussion is that we're a big brewery, and everybody in your guys' shoes oftentimes says to me that they want to be selling beer outside their tap room. I'm going to say right now, own your tap room. Everybody wants to be what they aren't, and I'd like to be a tap room guy instead of a big packaging brewery, so be who you are. Couple just notes. Please turn off all phones. For all you people in the back, there are seats spread out all over the place. If you have a seat empty next to you, why don't you raise your hand so that people can utilize those seats. There is a thing called Slido. Use the QR code to do that to ask questions. We have a great panel today. I'm going to let them introduce themselves because it's a lot easier, and let's get going.
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me okay? Yes. Huge thanks to the BA for having us here today, and huge thanks to all of you for being here. My name's Andrew Copeland with Secret Hopper and Craft Beer Professionals. One's a mystery shopping company for tap rooms. Many of you might be in Craft Beer Professionals. We aim to put community out there, bring people together, and everybody learn together. And it's nice to see everybody in person. And I have a wonderful team with me today. Tracy.
Hey, y'all. Hi. So my name's Tracy Bardigan. I am the taproom and events manager for Firemaker Brewing, located in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm also the chapter co-lead for the Atlanta Pink Boot Society and also serve on the DEI committee for the Georgia Brewers Guild. See you guys later.
My name is Anthony Drago. I'm the director of hospitality for Monday Night Brewing out of Atlanta, Georgia.
I am LaShonda Poteet. I am the taproom manager for Little Brother Brewing, which is out of Graham, North Carolina. I also am a cellar person and an assistant brewer for Joy Mongers out of Greensboro, North Carolina. And I am on the National Pink Boots Board.
And do we have a special guest today?
I'm back up.
Well, everybody, thanks for being here. I love the energy in the room right now. And who's excited to look at more PowerPoint slides? That's a little more than I expected. Don't worry. We've got just a few slides for you today. We're going to keep them to a minimum. We're going to focus on data. We're going to provide you with actionable strategies that you can take back to your breweries. We're going to give some examples of what has worked. And we're also going to give some examples of what might not have gone as planned. So often I find myself sitting through a presentation and we just look at slides. It's great to look at slides. It's great to learn. But we want to make sure you all have the sense of urgency to do something right now as soon as you get back to your tap rooms so you can be as successful as possible. Now, my friend Anthony with Monday Night, you're going to get us started. Wait.
Oh, wait. You got to go back to the slider one?
There we go.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to talk about some upselling techniques and how we can use them and implement them throughout our tap rooms to help kind of increase that check average and make sure that we are getting the most out of our tap room experiences.
Now, let's play a little game. Let's pretend we're going to have a to-go beer contest on a Saturday. Whoever sells the most to-go beer, crowlers, growlers, cans, you name it, is going to get a prize. Raise your hand if $100 is going to motivate you to sell more crowlers or growlers. Okay, keep them up. $50. $20. There's some hands still up. Yeah. You'd be surprised. Sometimes it takes a lot less to motivate people to sell more than you think. I've done trainings at breweries, and one of my favorite stories to tell is, you know, you go around the room, ask everybody what's going to motivate them. All they wanted at this one tap room was a $20 gift card to Chick-fil-A. Literally, a fancy chicken sandwich was all it was going to take the entire staff to get them motivated to sell more beer on a Saturday afternoon. Now, I want to share a little data with you all. We see that taproom staff encourage beer to go 19% of the time. 1 out of 5 times, your taproom staff saying, hey, Tracy, would you like some to go? And when the staff doesn't suggest that, the guest only makes the purchase on their own 9% of the time. But when your staff asks the guests if they'd like to take some lager home with them, some IPA home with them, the guest says yes 49% of the time. Nearly 50% of the time. This is from a data set of 6,000 taproom visits. That blows my mind. So simply just asking, it goes a long way. Another situation. Think about you've been at another taproom, a brewery, or a restaurant. You finish your beer. You're waiting for someone to encourage you to have another. You're just sitting there. You're getting frustrated. What are you probably going to do? I think I hear a few people saying they're going to leave. You're going to get really frustrated and you're going to leave. We see that on taproom experiences. Brewery staff are only encouraging another beer 45% of the time. So nearly 50% of the time, staff are not encouraging that second beer. But when staff magically suggest it, the guest spends $6.50 more. Isn't that kind of amazing? So now, Tracy, I want to hear some strategies from you. What's the benefit from training and motivating your team to better upsell?
So one of the biggest benefits that we see from this is obviously what it comes down to is how are we going to get the staff to be excited about it? And what it comes to is, well, if y'all sell that second beer, if you sell a six-pack or whatever it is, they're going to buy it. And most people aren't going to look at their check at the end and go, well, they only poured me this beer. They didn't pour the six-pack. Let me only tip on this. They're going to tip on the whole thing. So whenever we talk to staff about it, we're like, y'all can sell more. And you'll get more tips, and it just makes sense that way. And then beyond that, it leads to more comfortability whenever the staff is also talking to them. And it seems like a higher level of customer service, and it's the normal spiel. It's like, oh, yeah, hey, I saw you guys had Perfect Match IPA. You know, we have that in six packs, too. Even if they're, when you're going through the process of closing out the tabs, it's just part of that, like, spiel, and it seems more well-organized and not so awkward of, like, have you ever had a beer in your fridge? Do you want some with you? But you just be like, yeah, take it home with you. Heck yeah. So a lot more comfortable, easy flow.
How have you been able to motivate your team to want to sell that beer to go?
Mostly just dirty looks. But no. We've done different, like, six-pack competitions. Who can upsell the most? We'll give it, like, a weekend, even if we have one bartender who maybe only works on, like, one Saturday of the week. We're like, all right, let's do it percentage by sales. Who's pushing the most six-packs to go? So there are ways to make it fair and fun to where you want to push more. Or also, we all know, have a beer that's going to be out of date soon. We're like, y'all, we got to sell this. Let's go. And then you just upsell and push it.
So obviously, LaShonda, we don't want our staff to feel and sound like robots. What are some things you've done at Little Brother to get your team to authentically actually want to upsell?
So we cater to a crowd that is in a downtown area, so it would consist of more like lawyers and business people getting off work. So my strategy is more of paying attention before they finish that second beer and trying to figure out if they had a hard day, if they had a hard case, or they may actually be a person coming from court that day. And suggesting that second beer to them and paying attention and starting just like a small conversation, just trying to figure out how their day was going before they actually walked into your tap room. So I just feel like more personable experiences increase that chance to sell that extra beer.
It's all about building relationships. Now, Anthony, what are some actions that have been successful for you and your staff to get guests to want to purchase to go?
So we have four locations within the Southeast, and we allow each one of our general managers a $100 limit every single month to incentivize their staff on whatever kind of strategies or KPIs they want to hit that month to kind of boost those sales and recognize them. The funny thing about it, though, is I don't know if we're going to talk about some of the negatives, though, is people tend to be a little competitive, I've found. And there's been one or two times where they get a little too competitive and start chasing people down to the beer cooler and trying to upsell some more beer. So for the most part, the $100 tends to work a lot with our taproom staff. That financial incentive is huge for them. But you definitely have to keep an eye on people because some people can very aggressively sell and it can quickly turn into a used car salesman tactic.
Only losers don't get to go beer.
Yeah.
And don't worry, everybody. We're going to dive a ton more into motivation in a little bit. You know, so Anthony, you shared an example of what works, something that doesn't work. Tracy, what's a missed opportunity you've seen or something that's actually not helped sell more to-go beer?
The over-aggression, for sure. But also just when people, I mean, you have the tools in front of you to figure out what people like and what people are buying. So if you look at whenever you're closing out that tab, we use Arrived at the brewery, and you have to hit through some screens, and our staff usually will hit details first, see, like, okay, man, you got four of the same beer. And they're like, hey, if you want to do a to-go of this, we have this beer. It looks like you loved it, and that's a huge missed opportunity. If your staff is just a little, like, running through the motions a little too fast, just, like, take a second, turn it around. And also, having it prominently displayed with signage, missed opportunity if you don't.
Kind of adding on that, if you don't mind, is a lot of times, especially on a busy Saturday, busy Friday, it can quickly turn into a transactional sale as opposed to a relationship-based sale, and you quickly want to turn and burn, get the customer, figure out what they want, and you'll hear a lot of bartenders when you walk up to a bar sometimes just be like, what can I get you, right? That's not kind of what we want to do in the tap room. The experience has changed a lot over the past 5, even 10 years, where it's a lot more relationship-based of asking them, taking the time, slow down, what brings y'all in, what do you normally drink? And that alone easily can help return customers and increase that check average when it comes to to-go beer as well.
And a couple things they mentioned, you know, as new people come into your tap room who've never visited a brewery before, yes, those people still exist. They might not even know that to-go beer is a thing. So make them aware by building these relationships. And something Tracy touched on earlier is, you know, when a guest is checking out and they buy to-go beer, they're going to tip on it. The data actually shows that guests who purchase to-go beer tip higher. And the reason is because if you're purchasing to-go beer, you probably had an experience that included higher engagement. So you feel that connection. So you're already going to tip your staff higher, and you're buying to-go beer, so that tip's going to be even greater. So I think that's absolutely fascinating. Now, Tracy, what's next?
All right, y'all. So as I mentioned, I'm part of the DEI board, and we're talking about diversity and inclusion, right? So why would you not? To me, having a diverse holding just means that you are trying to welcome as many people as possible into your tap room. So obviously, most of y'all are amazing craft brewers. It's why you're here. So this importance, though, we're talking about drinks for everyone. We're talking about why not offer some, like, if you can buy, like, kombucha to have on the side, if you can offer a non-alcoholic or gluten-free option. My goal is to make people fight for a reason not to go to Firemaker. You don't have to have every single beverage, but you want people to, like, if there's a group of six of y'all, you're going to figure out, like, okay, you know what, honestly, I just don't like their patio. That's cool, but it's not going to be because of the beverages.
So Tracy nailed it. A visit to a taproom isn't complete without you all finding the right guest a drink for each guest. Now, who here, you know, as a drinker, as a consumer, when you go to a new brewery, who here likes to start with a flight? Raise your hand. Okay. Who likes to pour a flight? Yeah, that's about what I expected to see. You know, while it might not be your favorite activity, it actually does have some financial implications. And the data shows that guests actually spend 25% more when you start by suggesting a flight. So the guest is going to spend 25% more when you suggest starting a flight. Granted, you know, on a busy Saturday afternoon, it might not always be capable, but in times when you have the ability to do it, you're going to see the gain for it. And it's so important for you to use these opportunities to connect with the guests and find what's right for them. You know, and as Tracy mentioned, many of you are not just offering beer. Who's offering more than beer? I'm going to make sure you guys get your exercise today. So almost, that's a really heavy percent, are offering more than beer. Whether it's non-alcoholic, wine, liquor, you know, kombucha, other items, you all are trying to appeal to everybody in the party. And why does that matter? Because the more people you can appeal to, the more money they're going to spend, the longer they're going to hang out, and the sooner they're going to come back to your tap room. It's about creating that experience that is right for everyone in that party. No matter what they're looking for, if you have the ability to craft that for them, they're going to call your place home. And while I someday hope to have a treasure trove of data on this, I don't. But it's about more than data. It's truly about being inclusive. Now, Tracy, I'm going to go back to flights. I'm picking on you right now.
I'm down. Let's go.
Tracy, you said in our prep session for this, flights are not the devil. You have a unique way of helping indecisive guests order a flight.
Yes.
Talk to me about this.
So I think flights often are seen as like it's cumbersome, it's clunky. People are like, well, I want to pick out four items. And sometimes it does take a long time to get people to that point where you're waiting for them to make a choice, right? I think that flights are a great tool that can be utilized. You can get people to drink more. You're probably getting a better pour for your 4 ounce or 5 ounce as well, what your return is on that. But it also gives our bartenders a chance to talk to people more about more stuff. And we usually run out of flight glasses first. So we're running around like crazy going, oh, yeah, oh, how's your beer? Cool, awesome, yeah, we'll see you later. And, like, we're bussing constantly. Sorry, Anthony. One thing that we did do, though, is we had another bartender who suggested giant nerd. I play D&D, and I have a dice tower that I don't ever use for my sessions. And one of my bartenders was like, why don't we do a roll-your-own flight? So we have 4d20s on our dice board. People will roll 4 dice, and whatever pops up on there's no changes unless they roll a duplicate, and people can pick a flight. So what we have seen is the days that we offer that, we sell double the amount of flights normally. They usually get one flight of, like, a roll-your-own flight board, and then they also get another flight of, like, all right, well, these are actually the ones that I wanted to purchase. So the roll your own flight, it's a discount. It's like a dollar cheaper than what it normally would be. And then, yeah, a second flight. So it's a really cool and interactive way to get guests to also do it. And then they end up, they always spend more. So would recommend. Get a dice tower. Be a nerd.
Do you know you should try out that I just thought of?
What?
Just hang a dartboard behind the door, behind the bar.
Depending on our day, we stand in
front
of it.
You have 1 through 20. It's just set up. Just give them darts. It'll be great.
All right. We'll go with projectiles. I like the dice. Yeah. But it is fun.
What are your thoughts on flights?
So my thoughts on flights, I absolutely hate flights. Sorry. I'm just being honest. But they do tend to sell more drinks. We offer a half course. So instead of selling the flight, I offer half course. And to me, offering those half pours is you get 4 half pours and you end up with 2 beers versus the 1 beer that you only get on a flight.
And they can better rate it on tap then.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, LaShonda, Little Brother not only has beer, but you have wine and liquor.
Yes, and we also offer, now that Delta 8 and hemp products are becoming more of a thing, we offer a Delta 8 seltzer. So you can either have that Delta 8 seltzer by itself, or I have crafted specialty cocktails that go with that Delta 8 seltzer.
So what's been the benefit of offering all these unique beverages?
Everybody has an opportunity to have something, whether it's non-alcoholic, it's wine, or it's just a regular soda, water, anything. It brings more people into your tap room. Everybody doesn't have to have a beer just to visit your tap room.
Absolutely. Now, Tracy, you have a pretty diverse beverage line, too. Tell me about it.
So we keep our brewers very busy. We have Georgia Laws. I don't know how many of y'all are familiar with or from Georgia, but go Georgia. Our laws are pretty crappy, so we can only basically sell what we produce. But we have, again, our brewers are amazing, epic people. But we have beer, cider, seltzers. We have a high-gravity neutral alcohol line that we do. We have coffee, so we open at 9 a.m. a few days a week. We're going to have wine soon. We got a lot. We have 32 taps, and it's a lot. But it's really nice to have people come in who are maybe not as experienced with beer, who want to try beer. But if they don't have something, we're always like, dude, it's okay. This is your fallback. You know you're probably going to like this spiked coconut water. You're going to like it. We know that for sure, but you can try a lager or an IPA or something different, like, in the meantime.
Now, Anthony, you're newer to the cocktail scene over at Monday Night. How do you make people aware of your new offerings?
That's a wonderful question. A lot of it was, we were very grateful that we have a very high traffic area where a lot of it was word of mouth, people coming in and being like, oh my God, did you hear Monday Night's actually making liquor now? Because we just started distilling probably end of last year. We actually partnered with a local... what is her title? Cocktail Coach. I think her Instagram title is actually The Drinking Coach. She's absolutely incredible. And that, like, we work together hand in hand to craft our cocktail recipes so that, A, we had buy-in with the community to know that everything, we have this motto in our brewery that everything we do is intentional. Very, very intentional. We don't just do it to do it to raise that check average. We have to have a reason behind doing it. So we brought her on to kind of add on to that intentionality to make sure that we were crafting the best cocktails, and then partnered on with Instagram influencers and all that good stuff to kind of promote it.
Now, one other thing you shared with me that I thought was absolutely fascinating. At one of your locations, you added pizza and liquor, and what do you see the impact for in spending?
Yeah, so we were on the fence a little bit for a while of whether pizza or liquor we're going to cut into our beer sales, whether they're going to be complimentary or supplementary. But it actually kind of turns out that we saw a 30% increase in draft sales after introducing both liquor and pizza. So it's been a huge, huge bump. And it's just going into the diversity of options, right? You have that one person who comes in the tap room, or somebody who's like a huge, huge, huge fan of beer, right? But maybe their significant other hates beer. They're like, I don't want to go to that brewery. Quit dragging me to breweries. But now when you offer the wine and the cocktails on top of that, and then food, they're like, all right, that's great. I don't mind going to a brewery because there's stuff for me.
So, team, what's an example of adding more beverages going a little sour?
So our souring program is good. I'm just kidding. Sometimes...
Don't scare me like
probably,
this.
Probably, I'm just kidding. I totally forgot. Where am I? Sometimes maybe the choice fatigue a little bit, you know, where it is maybe a busy Saturday and... Why is the universe every... It's like there's always one day that people are like, today's the flight day. It always happens that way. But sometimes it takes a little too long, takes a little... It's difficult to get people to do that. There's also the matter of, you know, essentialism, where sometimes you really want to focus on one thing and really crush it. It can be kind of hard to do that with a lot of beverages, but yeah, but we do a pretty good job.
And Anthony, when you've added all these beverages, what's something that can cause a problem if you don't make sure your staff's fully, you know, bought in and aware?
Oh, I will say training. When you go to only offering beer in your tap room to then offering cocktails, everybody immediately goes to Tom Cruise and thinks we're going to expect them to make the world's best cocktails or, like, be this huge, like, mixologist, right? We made it as simple as possible, and to make sure that we trained it up, so batching cocktails, making sure that it's not too many ingredients, there's not too many syrups going into it, so just make sure your staff is trained. Take the time. Waste the product. It's not really waste because it's training, but use the product to make sure they're all trained up before you go live on cocktails.
Also communicate the excitement, too, of like, man, we're going to make 30% more. This is going to be awesome. Y'all's tip averages? Like, who doesn't tip more on a cocktail? Let's go. Like, instead of like, we got cocktails now. It's all about how you present it, right?
Well, now we're diving into merchandise, friends. Let's get this started. So there's a brewery I work with in Virginia. They were having their grand opening. So what I had them do, I had them give away, they were just white T-shirts with the brewery name on them, to the first couple hundred guests that came to the tap room on grand opening. And that day, the first guest that came through, they got so excited for a free shirt. They took it home. They bragged to their friends. They wore it. And now they were a walking billboard around town for that brewery. I'm not telling you all to give away your merch. But I am telling you, you need to have a merch program because it can definitely make you money and build your brand. Now, we're going to start with the data. Guests purchase merchandise 13% more when it's a visible location and clearly priced. Sounds kind of obvious, right? But we've all been in tap rooms where you can't find the merchandise rack. There's no pricing on it. You only see one size. And guess what? On that busy Saturday afternoon, are you going to hop in that long line and ask the staff, how much is that shirt over there? Or worst case, you know, what if your merch is behind the bar? Are you going to bother them when they're serving other customers flights on a really busy Saturday afternoon? Probably not. But if you can get your guests to convert on merchandise, the guest who purchases merchandise is going to spend $14 more. And Tracy, what are they going to also do?
Tip.
They're going to tip on it. So there's value in this. Put merch on your menu just like you would your to-go options. Let people know it is an option and make it easy for the guests. The easier you can make it for the guest, the more merch sales you're going to have. And just like we talked about earlier, just ask. You know what? As you're serving someone who might be from out of town, they're not probably going to visit for a while. Oh, you've had a really good time. Would you like to take a shirt with you? Little things like that are going to put it in the guest's brain, and they're probably going to say yes. So just ask and keep it organized. I really can't stress that enough. Now, let's talk about the benefit, because you all are the ones selling the merchandise. You know, how can you get your guests excited to buy merch?
Make it look cool. All right, next slide.
No, but really, how can you achieve it, Tracy? You know, how can you get this guest really pumped on it? Can you have them wear it? What do you do at FireMaker that works for you?
Yeah, we let our staff will wear FireMaker gear. We also have an online store that our awesome marketing team put together, too. So if we run out of sizes and stuff, we do shopping through Printful and Shopify, I believe. Miranda, is that right? Yeah, dope. Thanks, you're the best. So if we run out of it, and we always tell people, we're like, go to FireMakerBeerGear.com, use code FIRE10, 10% off. It'll basically cover shipping for you, but you can have any size, color, all that. And then having just some solid options and some cool options are a big thing. A lot of input from staff of what color do you want to see and things like that. Tangibles also.
LaShonda, what helps your merch game over at Little Brother?
We keep our merch. You pretty much get to our merchandise before you get to, like, a bartender. So as we walk into the door, over to the right is all of our merchandise before you even come to me to purchase a beer. So, and then we have our listing price. We make sure that everything is visible, everything is showable, and it's very colorful.
Making it easy.
Put together very nicely. Yeah.
Now, Anthony, I'm not calling you out, but perhaps in one of our sessions, you said the guest is lazy. Now, how can we make this easy for them?
Yeah, so a lot of people are very similar to myself. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to curse right here real fast, so I apologize, but people, including myself, are lazy as shit. So, next time you're thinking about your shopping experience in your merch section or even your to-go beer, right, I want you, like, to think about it. How many steps do I have to go through to purchase this piece of merch? And, like, every little thing, right? Like, whether it's going up there, finding the size, going through there, going back, waiting in line, and then checking out. Like, how simple are you actually making it for your customer to buy product? There's been a lot of tap rooms that I've been into, some of ours as well, where we've kind of redesigned things, where it's almost like we don't want people to purchase things. We make it incredibly hard for people to buy things, right? So just think about how many steps it takes to get into buying your merchandise.
And Anthony, you also love the concept exit through the gift shop. How does Monday night exemplify this?
So we put all of our merch extremely close to the cash register. We keep some extra sizes behind the register as well. So if people want to buy something or ask for sizes, we could just pull it up right there and give it to them. Once again, eliminating those steps between the person's wallet and our bank accounts. When it comes to exit through the gift shop, kind of my idea with merch is you look at these huge, huge, huge companies, places like Publix, places like amusement parks, where they have all the merchandise laid out. These people have spent millions and millions and millions of dollars to kind of figure out the best way to sell merchandise so that we don't have to spend those millions, right? So we're not reinventing the wheel. We just use what we already have and use what works best out in the real world and then implement those in our brewery.
And an example I like to give, like, think how many times you all have been traveling out of town. You go to a brewery for the first time, and you see the staff wearing someone else's shirt. You're finishing your first beer. You're probably going to say, oh, how's that brewery on your shirt? And what are they going to say? Well, it's awesome. That's why I'm wearing the shirt. Then where are you going to go for your next drink if you only have one more drink in you? You might go there. Really consider having your staff rep your brand because the guest is going to see it nonstop. Now, I want to talk about some things that might not have gone as planned for merchandise. Are there any examples or things you all tried that just didn't work well or tips you have to offer?
Our first merch display was about 15 feet up on a wall with no light shining on it, and they were just on pegs, and you couldn't see the shirts, you couldn't see the hats. It was awful. I, at CBC last year, I was asking, we go through Grandstand, I was asking them for quotes on some of their merch displays, and we don't have that money, and I wish we did. So I spent about $100 and created the display that's on here with some craft boxes that I stained darker. Literally pipedecor.com, which I'm sure was made for craft breweries, and like got shelves easily, lined everything up, and our merch sales, like, tripled immediately. And it was just it was $100 of time, and also we used to have 18 different color shirts and so many different hats, and we've really tried to streamline it and make it a little bit more intentional for that to be like scaled down a little bit, but clear prices, we didn't have that before, and easy and tangible.
Anthony, what do you do when you have lots of leftover merchandise from something that didn't sell as well as you anticipated?
So we, with our leftover merch, a lot of times we'll just mark it down at cost, and we'll sell it so we don't lose anything on that. It's really no hit to us, and it's free marketing out there, right? So we just get it out the door as quickly as possible and make sure we're not sitting on it for too long.
Great tips there. Now let's talk about events. LaShonda.
So we host a number of events in our tap room. We have a small event space in our back room. We have a street that's out on the front. So we do like a lot of not your typical normal events that you would normally think of, like just hosting trivia or not just having your pint night. We focus on like larger things to bring in our community.
And arguably just 5 years ago, it was just all about the beer. It was, you know, if you brew it, they will come mentality. But now it's about creating an overall experience. You have to have that memorable atmosphere, engaging staff, and of course you have to have the delicious beer. But events are a huge way to bring traffic into your tap room. They can create greater loyalty with your current customers and also expand your audience. And, you know, think about that slow Tuesday night in your tap room. You've got the same 10 people coming through. But you've got your staff who are giving you all these awesome ideas. Why not take one of those ideas, plan it out, and try it on that slow Tuesday night? Because worst case, you have the same 10 regulars on that Tuesday night. But best case, it might be something new that you can add to your event repertoire, and it makes you more money and brings in a whole new audience. So Tracy, talk to me a little bit about the different kinds of events that you all, you know, consider when planning something at FireMaker.
So we have, you know, your normal reoccurring events that we keep a really solid weekly schedule, but we also have publish a monthly schedule. Today we are having a Mother's Day, like how to make a floral arrangement class, and didn't cost us anything to do. One of our regulars is a very talented florist, and she said, "Can I do this?" And I said, "Yeah, hell yeah." And she goes, "Can I plan it and execute it?" And I went, Hell yeah. And so we will do one-offs like that, but it's via we're doing it through making these connections with our regulars, our staff, and stuff like that. We had a bartender who is he's a phenomenal human being, and he left us for greener pastures, and we're a little bitter about it. But what we did, he wasn't completely out of our lives, is now we have a once-a-month bingo with John, and it's literally called Bingo with John, and people are like, is that our John? It is. So it's kind of the value of how do we decide what to do and what are people asking for, and if you're doing the same thing over and over again and it's not working, should you keep doing it? Do you change it? That kind of thing.
So you recommend the mix of recurring than one-off events?
Yeah, and have them displayed. If you're partnering with someone, so like we had a goat yoga thing where they reached out and I said, hell yeah. They created the Facebook page, and we have a great marketing team, and we talked to our marketing team and got them in touch with them. They communicated, and it's cross-promotional, so now we have more reach, a larger reach based off of Facebook. We posted it in our tap room. They're posting it on their site, so it helps. If you have the same thing, you will get the same regulars, and that's awesome, but if you're trying new things and you're working with other companies and other people, you're going to get more people, period. So also, like, we're doing a hydroponics class, and they're advertising for it in, like, the county next door to us, and they're like, we didn't know you existed. I'm like, awesome, let's go. So do some fun stuff, and you don't always have to do the work for it.
So we talked a little about recurring and one-off. What about, like, public versus private events? What are you all's thoughts on that?
So I prefer our more private events. We don't shut our complete tap room down for, like, private events, but we do have a 50-person space in the back that people can rent out. We do bridal showers, engagement parties, vendor markets.
Do you have a lot? We have so many. We have birthdays and baby showers. Like, Noah, like, why?
Oh. Yeah, Tracy, no kids in breweries talk
No,
today.
I don't mind it, but, like, there are so many baby showers, and I'm like, y'all are messing with this mom. This is fucked up. Sorry. I'm like, everyone's like, this beer's great. And she's like, great. So.
We've hosted quite a few celebration of life parties
those
where people after
those.
The funeral don't want to do the traditional, you know, eat chicken and hang out. People come and, like, celebrate and, like, $1,000 tabs because mm-hmm. they're sad, but they want to drink and they want to rejoice in it, and I'm there for it.
LaShonda, how do you make people aware that they can use your space?
My card is listed up front. There is a we have a flyer that says that you can rent out our backspace. We do advertise it every, like, 2 or 3 weeks. It does go across, like, our Instagram and our Facebook page that lets you know that for a certain amount you can rent out that back room. You can do it for, like, 1 hour, 2 hours. Like, we don't cut off the cap. It's just, like, all kinds, like, all-inclusive for anything that you want to do back there.
Can I say one thing really fast about this? One really important thing with private events, so I'm also the private events manager, and I used to do weddings and big events for hotels and all this cool stuff, whatever. Y'all, like, remember your worth and your value when you're trying to rent out your tap room space and you're trying to make an event work for someone. Don't be afraid to charge them because you are charging for, like, services and everything. So y'all, like, know your worth. Don't forget, like, there are hotels that will charge, like, $2,000 just for, like, this table. So not saying do that, but, like, know your worth, do the math, figure out how much you would be making off the tap room on a normal time, and, like, just know your worth for events.
For more on events, see Elise with Mopcraft. I know she's giving a session later at this conference. That's probably going to be pretty awesome. So, Anthony, why is it important for you to have your team part of the decision-making process when thinking about events?
With our bartenders, I mean, it's important to figure out, like, we kind of run our private events on the motto of private events and public events, both. Is the juice worth the squeeze, right? How much are we putting into these events? How much time? How much labor? Like, when it comes to our marketing team, how much time is our marketing team devoted to making graphics, to pushing it on socials? How much real estate is it taking up on our Instagram? And just figuring out overall, is the event worth it? Because we've run a lot of events in our past where we've kind of put a lot of mental bandwidth into these events, and you're kind of doing it for, like, maybe $500,000 at the end of the day, or, like, total take home, right? And it's like, at that point, yeah, it's a great thing, and you may do, like, $20,000 in sales at this event, but if you're putting all this money into the event, why are we hosting it? So, yeah, we like to live. Is the juice worth the squeeze?
I like it. Now, LaShonda, I can't wait to visit your tap room in just a few weeks for this event right here with dinosaurs because it looks absolutely awesome. So tell me about, like, creating a unique event like this and making it a success.
So we host about 4 of these events each year, and this is our 2nd year doing our Dinosaur Festival. It's more around everyone, so making sure that your grandmother can come, your parents can come, your kids can come, and it's like a super safe environment. Food trucks, there's like the giant dinosaur right there is what we keep in the... There's like a beer garden right around the corner, and they keep that so you can take pictures. Yeah, the giant...
Wait, does it live there normally?
No, but it's typically there for like 2 weeks, so it'll be up in like a week at like the Forgotten Road Ale's tap room, and it'll stay there, and then it moves there. There's a giant wall that each individual kid can come up and just like color a space. It's just like a very colorful, fun event, and with June being Pride Month, like the colors and like just what all is behind it without just being like just one thing. It's like just an all-inclusive thing.
Well, it's definitely thinking outside the box to do something like this.
Definitely.
Yeah. Now, Tracy, how can an event that seems to be a really great idea go bad?
Lack of communication. I love planning. I love it. And it's really important to get buy-in from everybody. So even if, let's say, y'all are going to do an Oktoberfest party. What? A brewery? Have one meeting though where y'all plan it with everybody. Get like a lead bartender involved, have sales, have marketing, have your brewer, so that way y'all can like nail out the details and know, like, for instance, last year we had a bunch of stuff happening during our Oktoberfest celebration, and I texted the brewer and said, awesome, we got those firkins ready, and he's like, what time are we doing that? I was like, per the email, 1 o'clock, and he's like, it was late. But anyway, we had enough meetings and we were able to talk enough that we got it done. But communication, I'm a advocate of the hit by a bus plan. So it's something that we have at our tap room anyway. So all of our leadership has basically a hit by a bus plan. So if you get hit by a bus, someone can pick up and mostly do your job. I like to leave some key details out so they know I'm important. Have that for events. Like, think if you got sick or if something happened, if I get into a car accident on my way into work that morning and someone has to start doing the event, they can look at a full event order and details and go, okay, cool, we should have 3 vendors that are going to be setting up here, here, and here. It's like events for dummies. So no detail is too few. Just remember, communicate with your staff. It also helps with buy-in. And also communicating with, like, we have a big event that we sell tickets for, and we give all of our staff their own coupon codes. So we're like, you use code LaShonda for, that gives everyone 25% off general admission tickets. And then we incentivize our staff, whoever sold the most tickets, will get a $50 Amazon gift card. So that tells them to go up to people when they're checking out, be like, yeah, we have this festival, Hana Leland, you use code Tracy, get 25% off.
Now, Tracy, how can not having enough staff make an event just go terrible?
It makes everything feel so hectic. And y'all know that at the end of the day, it's going to happen. Worst case scenario, the event happens. And no one knows that it was stressful. But it's that ease of, like, being able to, like, prep, get stuff done, properly staff your bar, overstaff your bar. Let's, like, have it run smoothly and don't be afraid of overstaffing, because y'all know that feeling of when you look and you're like, that was supposed to be done 2 hours ago. Crap. You're like texting your friends like, do you guys want to learn how to bartend today?
So we're going to talk a little bit more about motivation to wind down. I think motivation is so important. Now, we've talked a lot about the guest day, but just like each guest, all your team members, they require a unique experience. And as brewery owners and managers, it's your responsibility to understand their needs, their goals, and how you can craft the perfect experience for them. And there are 3 types of motivation that I like to talk about. You know, it's rewards, it's recognition, and it's opportunity. And, you know, rewards, it's when you give someone a prize. It's something physical. It's a trophy. It's, you know, a case to take home. It's something physical, and some people absolutely love having that reward or prize. Recognition, it's kind of more like a gold star. This is where you may publicly state that LaShonda did the best job at XYZ. And Anthony did an amazing job of selling beer last Saturday. And it might be a real gold star. Or it could be just simply congratulating that person at a team meeting. It could be, you know, putting their picture on the wall of fame in your staff room. It could be even a shout out in your brewery staff newsletter. But it's making someone publicly aware that they've done an awesome job. Then there's opportunity. Opportunity is access to greater education and opportunities for career growth. I think that's so important, and we don't talk about it enough. An opportunity could be a particular employee wants to show you they can sell the most crowlers on a Saturday because they want a promotion.
An opportunity could be, you know, this person wants to do a great job in your tap room because they want to run their own brewery one day. Do you know your team's needs? It's so important you have these conversations and understand the expectations of everybody who's working for your brewery, because you might not know. And once again, you just simply have to ask the question. And more importantly, motivation isn't something I want you to do as soon as we leave the session one time after CBDC. Don't just host that one to go beer contest and say, I did it. Great. Andrew said I did it. Good job. No, do it year round and mix up the metrics. Get your team really excited, not just once, but regularly. Make it part of their routine to feel like, you know, you're rewarding them, you're recognizing them, you're giving them additional opportunity. Now, Anthony, you talked a little bit earlier at Monday night how you give them managers $100 to give out however they want. But what impact does this have on the staff?
So staff really enjoys competition. I mean, all of our staffs are very grateful that they are very competitive people and they just kind of like one-up each other a little bit. So the staff is very appreciative of that. And then with other like recognition and stuff that we do, just if I could tack on that is, I mean, we do weekly updates within each one of our tap rooms, what private events are coming up, run of shows, new beers coming out, what we're tapping, all that good stuff. So we'll do, we'll kind of shout out one of the bartenders. We call it like Badass of the Week, right? So that person can either take home like a bottle of liquor, some six pack, some merch, whatever they kind of want from us to really help kind of like shout out somebody in particular. And then once a quarter as a company, we actually do an all-hands meeting where Jeff, Joel, and Jonathan, our three co-founders, will get together and they'll kind of address the entire company simultaneously at one of our tap rooms. And we have this really, really cool program where you actually get a free denim jacket up to like that. We do a patch reward program, right? So we nominate people based on our core values within the company to receive one of these patches, and it's just kind of a cool like opportunity for everybody to get together. Everybody wears their denim jackets on that day, that quarter, and they show off all their patches that they've gotten or been awarded. So it's just recognize, right? It doesn't cost us anything, but it means the world to a lot of people.
And to tag on to that, you know, it's important to keep your rock stars being awesome. But it's also really frustrating when Tracy consistently is the number one salesperson each month, and I just have to see Tracy on stage over and over again. Also recognize people for improving. You know, there's nothing like taking that new person and getting them to be better, teaching them the skills through your training and then encouraging staff to recommend that flight, encourage that beer to go. Reward them for those improvements. I think that's really, really important. Now, LaShonda, I feel like you're everywhere these days, and you're huge on opportunity. Talk to me a little bit about why this is important at Little Brother.
You just have to let your staff be aware that those opportunities are out there. I would have never become a Pink Boots leader or be on the national board if I would have not known that Pink Boots is out there. And I found that out through one of my staff members. She let me know what Pink Boots was. I moved into that, and then I became what I am now. But then also just paying attention. Like, the majority of the scholarships that I have won, I just was going through an Instagram feed, and I found this scholarship, and I decided I was going to have two beers and write about myself.
And it makes you a more valuable person.
I mean, that's all you do. That's how you win those scholarships. That's how you get a chance to get those opportunities. You're talking about yourself. So you have to have confidence.
Now, Tracy, let's look at, you know, what you're doing at FireMaker. How has motivation increased the morale and the buy-in of your team?
It helps us so much and makes people more excited for, like, their day-to-day, like, operations. Or, like I said, like, with giving small incentives for, you know, Honolyland, sell tickets, do this. It just helps them be more excited and engaged. We have a bulletin board at the back that we put. We're huge advocates of Google reviews, so if you ever check out at FireMaker, part of our spiel will probably be like, do you guys have a good time? Awesome. If you want to leave us a 5-star Google review, that would be great. We recently passed Monday night on our Google review count.
Whoa.
That'll probably change in 2 days.
Which location?
Midtown. Yeah. Google reviews are very important.
Everybody leave FireMaker review right now.
It better be 5 stars. I will find you. I'm just kidding. No, but it makes the staff excited. And we also do a gold coin program. We will do, if there's something that a staff member has done that's above and beyond, the managers are able to nominate them. And we send out an email to each of the managers and say, hey, Andrew, he stayed, a pallet broke, and he actually helped pick up all these cases of beer. He didn't have to do that. He was in the tap room that day. I want to give him a gold star, and it doesn't cost us anything to do that for the acknowledgement. And then quarterly, they will be able to win something from a certain massive industrial company called Uline that we buy. Whenever we get the free present, we're like, you want a camping chair that says Uline? That's pretty cool. And a $50 gift card. And people lose their mind over it. We bought iron-ons to say fire maker, so it is a fire maker chair. But people get excited about it. And then at the annual like company party at the end of the year, we have a game that we play where we put everybody who got gold coins, and based off tenure, they also get certain entries into it as well. And we just do a prize wheel and a prize board. And so we're like, okay, you, all right, Anthony, your name came up. We're like, which board do you want? I want, I don't know, Fire Maker for $200. And it's a random thing from like a $5 Starbucks gift card to a speaker to stuff that restaurants donated, like gift cards. And people, like our staff, love it. And it doesn't really cost us much. So it makes people actually look forward to our company Christmas party, where maybe they might not.
But, and you really just need to find ways to keep your team motivated year-round, mix up the metrics. One of my favorite metrics to monitor you can get through your POS is tip percentage. You know, if Anthony's consistently getting 17% tip, but LaShonda's getting a 27% tip, who's engaging it at a higher level and who's building more relationships with the guests? Sorry to pick on you there, Anthony. But when you're able to successfully do this, you're going to see greater passion in your team. You're going to see greater teamwork. We're going to work together better because we like each other. You're going to see higher tabs. You're going to see higher retention. That's going to make all of your jobs easier, because if your staff's doing the right job, you're not going to have to replace them. You're not going to have to consistently find new people and retrain them. And you're going to see greater taproom success. And with that said, we want to quickly, very, very quickly, give you four things to remember. If you only remember four things from today's session, these are it.
Just ask. That's all you got to do. When the customer's up at the bar, just ask if they want anything to add on there.
Change it up. Ask your staff what do they want to do. But also, if it's not working, give it a couple months to see if it does work, and then switch it up to something different.
Make your staff aware of those opportunities, those things that you pay for them, or those things that you may not pay for them. Just let them know that there are opportunities out there outside of your tap room that make them want to sell more things for you.
And we're all very lucky to work in the beer industry, but tell your staff you appreciate them. Please make them feel valued. So now, any questions? And I know we're going to get to the Slido slide in just a sec, but if you want to reach out to any of us, we are literally all open to conversations. We spend way too much time on the internet. So if anybody wants to just follow us up with a quick phone call to bounce around some ideas, let's do it. So take those pictures really quickly. We're here for this. But now, and I can go back to it in a minute, too. The fun Slido slide.
I got cards. Oh, yeah.
This is the awkward moment where everybody's entering those questions. Tracy, I'll let you take this one. Are you worried about merch theft?
No, not any more than I'm worried about people stealing pint glasses. But I mean, we know it's going to happen, right? But
Free marketing.
If people choose to steal a couple things, then it is what it is. But for the most part, our merch is also right next to the bar. I like to believe that people are nice, right?
Can I quickly add on to this one? That exit through the gift shop slide, make sure your merch isn't right next to your exit door. Like, right next to it. One of our locations when I came on board was like that, and you wouldn't imagine the amount of loss that we had. So make sure your merch is in the right area.
Anthony, I think this one's targeted at you. You have quite a few tap rooms. Any suggestions as to organizing multiple tap room location events without having one of those locations feel left out?
We do once a quarter. We make sure that once a quarter we have an event that's consistent across every single one of our tap rooms. So in October, we do an event. The name changes a little bit based on what state or what location we're in. So we call it Carve in the Courtyard in Atlanta. So we buy like 6 or 7 huge, like 700 pumpkins or something like that. We just give them out for free. So people come in, they carve pumpkins, they drink beer. And that's just an example of like keeping it consistent across each tap room. And your marketing team will like you a whole hell of a lot more if they don't have to post 90 different Instagram posts.
And I'll take the QR code ordering one right now. I think that really depends on your service model. Because the goal is to build relationships. If you have QR codes on tables, consider having people bounce. Like if the bartender's behind the bar and it's a little slow, have them consider just touching the table. You don't want to confuse people about the ordering process, but just say, hey, when you're ready to order your next one, feel free to come up to the bar to help them. So it really depends on your ordering experience. And with QR codes, I know a lot of people are doing it with menus because a lot of people get frustrated with printing menus. But I think there's a happy medium there if you do print menus. And who here prints a menu? Who here has flagships?
A lot of people. Put the flagships at the top of your menu, then a QR code at the bottom, scan for our limited releases. That way you can kind of solve both and you're not printing a billion sheets of paper. LaShonda, there was one for you about Instagram. Talk about how you use your brand to, or Instagram to develop your brand.
I actually recently just received a scholarship for my Instagram to help me market and put those different things inside of it. But it's mainly about adding that bio into there, that extra link into your Instagram where it can filter into there so you can list everything on one page versus people having to go to like different places. So adding that LinkedIn. Is it LinkedIn?
Linktree.
Linktree. Adding that Linktree into your Instagram.
Another thing for Instagram and marketing and all that, if it is worth the time to build out like a Facebook event, even though people are like, no one uses Facebook, people still use it. Building that and then working with your marketing team to make sure that they have all the pertinent details. And then if like we had a party, it was free to attend, but you could buy all you could drink tickets for a certain cost. And then everyone thought it was a fully ticketed event. So we learned for the next one, how do we tweak it? So it's just being cognizant and taking notes, remembering that kind of thing, to be able to advertise as clearly and concisely, because people can be lazy like me.
And I knew this question would come up. How can you offer incentives without having individual bartender logins on POS systems? Does anybody have an answer?
Yes. I highly, highly, highly recommend that you don't use one single login code for everybody. It helps hold people accountable. It helps incentivize people. If you have theft, a lot of people, I mean, free beer, right? We want to give out free beer to people to an extent, right? Too much is we're not going to be making any money. But if you do have a single login, average it out, right? Mm-hmm. Who worked this shift? So mark down X, Y, and Z worked this shift for this many hours. They sold this many beers or to-goes. And then kind of mark it down. Give them all that total and then run it throughout the month, right? So each shift that they work, maybe you'll start to figure out that that's one beer tender. Every time they work, they're selling way more six-pack than any other shift that they're on. So it will average out by the end of the month.
And also, just like Andrew was saying, look at your tip percentages for a day. Because if it's dead and, like, if you sold, I don't know, let's say you had a $1,000 day and the tip percentage was 15% or 10%, you should probably go to your bartender and go, hey, man, so what happened last night? Because if it was really slow, you should have had the chance to, like, knock it out of the park with these interactions, right? Like, you could have had, like, a 25% check average. So asking those questions and using that data, taking and actually looking at it is really, really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, just like I said, look at the trends. Because if I'm behind the bar and the tips percentage is always like 20%, then when I'm not behind the bar, it's higher. You're going to see your weak links. You're going to see your rock stars. Look at the data. Favorite technology for communicating with your staff, friends?
Everything.
Seven shifts, pieces of paper, mailers, tattoos.
Smoke signals.
Yeah. Pigeons.
Over-communicate. One person's never going to read. We use Slack between all of our locations.
Yeah.
They're never going to read Slack on their off time if they're part-time employees. That's fine. We don't expect people to work when they're not working. So email, Slack, written, bulletin board within the tap room, and those are just seriously some of the ways that we communicate.
We have monthly tap room Zoom meetings too, where we just, it's like 15, 20 minutes. We have a monthly focus. It's kind of boring. Everyone is just sitting there like eyes glazed over, but we're like, you guys ready? But at least they have all the information.
We do team outings. So before that team outing, you will have to listen to me for 45 minutes before I incentivize you.
How often do y'all do those?
Once a month.
I wish I were cool. Like
we're a small tap room then.
Yes, you all are nailing it right now. Like having
a
team.
Four employees, so it's really easy.
Like when you bring your team together, it's important to also have those trainings where it might get a little boring sometimes, but you're going over important things. Mm-hmm. But also, do things that are fun. Go bowling. You know, go out to places. You know, organize something where people are interacting, not wearing their hats they normally wear in the tap room. Because guess what? If LaShonda and I like each other, we're going to work together a lot better on a busy Saturday afternoon. Versus if we don't get along, we're not going to help each other out. We're not going to have that level of teamwork.
I was just going to say, nobody's ever complained during a performance evaluation or a one-on-one that I've had with people that we communicated too much.
Yeah.
It's always communication. 9 times out of 10, somebody's biggest complaint is communication. So communicate, communicate, communicate.
We've got a couple merch-related questions. How frequently do you all refresh your merch displays?
We are constantly like making sure it looks like it's stocked and nice and neat and clean and that kind of thing. As far as like new brands, maybe like kind of seasonal, like every maybe 6 months. I don't like buying merch. It's not. I'm like, can we just have black T-shirts and everyone's happy? But we always make sure it looks nice and neat. I don't know about you guys.
And follow up to that, you know, how do you convince the owners or management that it's time to order updated merch?
Based on sales and trends, looking what you got and what's cool.
Numbers help a lot, but also convincing them that it was their idea in the first place.
Yeah. Manipulation.
That's a big one.
Only some of you are left in the room. Manipulate people. That's how you win. Just kidding.
Okay, so what is the most popular event for your customers but easiest event for you all to put on?
Trivia.
Trivia, who are we kidding?
Carve in the courtyard.
What is that, Anthony?
We buy a bunch of pumpkins. It's free for everybody. The entire neighborhood comes out. They just carve pumpkins, and all we have to do is put a couple bins down of pumpkins, and we have probably about 800 to 1,000 people come out that day.
I do like that your easiest event is one that's just give people knives and beer. You're like, it runs itself.
Come stab some shit and buy some beer. We'll be
honestly,
great.
We had a burn the past party after Valentine's Day, and because we were, and it was like not meant to be like a spiteful thing. It was like, hey, like bless and release, and we had some spiteful people out there. It was fun. If you guys have burn barrels, do a burn the past party next year. That shit was fun.
And LaShonda, I know I'm so excited to go to your dinosaur event. I know nothing about it besides dinosaurs are going to be there. So it's simple.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. But there'll be food trucks. There'll be events. There's a T-Rex. Like race where people like have to tie their arms up like T-Rexes, a dinosaur, a dinosaur chicken nugget eating contest. So, girl, I'm in. Live music,
awesome.
It's gonna be.
I can't wait. So we got another good one. How do you grow and keep the relationship with customers at the bar without being transactional if it's a busy Saturday? Yeah, I've written an article actually on this. It's called the 30-second conversation, Google Secret Hopper 30-second conversation. But it's literally about, hey Tracy, how are you doing? Have you been here before? Isn't it a beautiful day? What can I get you to drink today? Thank you very much. Literally, you can build that relationship even in 30 seconds. Granted, it's not gonna be as deep, but you can make the guests feel like you appreciate them. You can help them find the drink very quickly and thank them for being there. Always thank your guests, everybody.
Yes.
We didn't say it earlier. Always thank your guests. Because when guests receive that thank you, a greeting in the beginning and a thank you at the end, they are 99% likely to tell their friends and family about that experience. But if you don't give them that thank you at the end, it literally goes to like 60%, meaning they're probably not going to tell their friends because no one wants to leave somewhere and doesn't feel appreciated. So literally just get in the routine of the rapid-fire questions, but you can make it happen even during the shortest encounters.
I want to add to that really quickly too, because I saw another question come up that said, how do you get guests to return glassware to the bar? Never going to happen, first of all. So for our staff, we kind of use that glassware time as a key to like, you have the lull and one of your people can go out and collect glassware. When you're collecting it, you can do two things. You obviously grab it and go, hey guys, how's it going? Y'all enjoying your day? Awesome. And then also, hey, you're almost done. Do you want another beer? I can just go put it in for you and I'll bring it right back. So it's upselling, it's customer service. You're multitasking, you're getting glassware and you're having that. So it's an easier way to connect with people during a busy shift.
How about any great Crowler promotion to drive traffic or sales?
We opened 8 days before the Great Quar, so we ran predominantly off Crowlers initially. We will do specials of certain beers that we're ready to get rid of, but we ran the hell out of our Dixie canning machine for a long time, so I don't know if y'all do any.
I mean, we just run the typical promotion that we do, $100 per month for whoever sells the most Crowlers. Our Birmingham location, we actually can't sell to go because of licensing. So we have a Crowler machine that we do in-house, and that one we normally offer up like that $100 gift card. And then on top of that, since you can't take beer home out of that location, we offer up 6 Crowlers, 7 Crowlers, whatever it may be for the employee that sells the most. And a lot of times they go straight for the beer that they can't get in package anywhere else, right? It's just a tap room draft only release, and now they get to take it home for free. They get very excited about it, and they're all on board with selling Crowlers.
But just like we said earlier, just ask. Ask your staff what's going to motivate them to sell more. So for anyone who was supposed to come to Jackalope, or maybe you came to Jackalope last night, shout out to the Jackalope team. They were amazing. Shout out to Jackalope team for sure. We were supposed to have a car smash. It didn't happen, but there was a lot of liability in regard to that. So we go to the experts. They had insurance agents write up a little waiver, do all that fun stuff. Talk to the experts. Talk to people smarter than us. I don't think we can really give you insurance advice, but I'm sure there's people your brewery works with or should work with who can.
We require events or insurance for certain events, especially if it's like, I don't know, fraternity mixer. And they can get it online really, really easily for a good price.
So here's a fun one. Suggestion. Instead of asking what people normally drink, ask what they're in the mood for. It doesn't put them on the spot and promotes pride in their choice. That's awesome. Definitely empowering the guests there. I love that.
I like that.
How about getting a little marketing-ish now? Is there such thing as too much social post?
No.
Miranda, is there such thing as too much social post?
If you're posting like 10 a day, maybe.
Hell yeah. 10 a day is too much. Other than that, no, you're good.
I think when you're thinking about social posts, you have so much you want to say. You have your events, your latest beer releases, shout-outs for your staff. You know, just you don't want it to overdo and kind of overlap with one another. Think about the messaging and make sure you can get it all successfully so it can get seen. What's right for your audience, we don't know. But you all have so much to say, and just you'll only know by measuring those data engagements. But here's a fun one, trivia. Where do you get your trivia questions and answers? Do you write them yourself or use a company? Do you host it yourself? It's like 10 questions.
We have a regular that has been doing trivia for about 20 years in our town that hosts it. So he has a cult following.
We pay for a company.
Yeah, we pay for a company. But it's important to make sure that the ROI is there, right? So we check all of our trivia tabs as trivia. So we make sure that we are making back our money on paying that company. Because if three people are showing up and you're paying for a company, it doesn't make sense. Don't do that.
They have different local ones, so like I know Geeks Who Drink, I think, is national. We use one called Trivia Zone in Atlanta. Dave is great. If you're in Atlanta, I'll give you his email. And Dirty South Trivia is another company who I know folks use, but most of them have a local place.
Yeah, you can find them pretty easily. Just check online.
Here's a good one. Pros and cons for closing down the tap room for company outings when we're open 7 days a week. Make sure you let your guests know. Don't just put it up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, hey, we're closed tonight. Give them proper notice. You want to make sure you're exceeding their expectations. You don't want them to get upset when they show up on Saturday night to find out that you're closed. So if you're going to do it, plan it and let people know.
We also, if we are closed for like a private event or something like that, we'll give people a voucher that's just like, hey, I'm sorry we're closed today, but here's like a pint on us next time.
What are your all thoughts on tip pooling?
We tip pool at every single one of our locations, which may surprise a lot of people. I've been in the restaurant industry for about 15 years now. I've seen the pros and cons of both sides. Tip pooling holds everybody accountable. I've seen some servers hold each other accountable more than some managers sometimes because of tip pooling. At the end of the day, we are all a team working towards the same goal, so I don't see why we would kind of break that out and individualize it when all of us are working just as hard to help support each other.
We're a tap room, so we don't have like the restaurant aspect of it, but I really like tip pooling because it's the same thing where everyone is working together. And we have also, on some days, we'll have three separate bars functioning because we have our main tap room, a beer garden, and another, like a beer hall. And unless it's a private event, which they will keep the income from that because it's tough work sometimes to set up a private event. But yeah, we tip pool. We like it. Our staff hasn't. We are very clear and we are very communicative of these are how tips work. It's based off hours, da da da, like that kind of thing. So that way our staff doesn't feel like we're lying to them about their money, of course. So we're very, very, very transparent.
So I'm going to take any tips on teaching customers how counter service works. They don't read signs. More signs. Literally, though, every time you interact with that guest, say, hey, when you're ready for your next drink, come back and order at the bar. Or maybe like a little tabletop sign that says the exact same thing. When you're ready for your drink, order at the bar. You can't tell them enough. Of course, you're still going to have those guests who never learn. But anything you can do to try to make them aware, hopefully they catch on. But it's all about education. It's really about education and putting it in their face. Because, Anthony, because the guests are, what's the word you used earlier?
We're all pretty lazy.
Yeah. But also, y'all, don't forget, like, if it's a slow day and I'm just staring at you and I'm like, you have to come to the bar to get this drink. And you're like, what do I do? Just go up to the table. Most of our tablets are movable. Just walk to the table instead of being angry for no reason. And then just be like, hey, whenever you're ready for your next one, if I'm busy, we normally do counter service, but I got you. What can I get for you?
LaShonda, you love talking about opportunity. What advice do you have for someone getting into a brewery managerial role?
Oh, man. So just be open to learning new things and communicate with your boss would be the most that I can.
How have you learned the best? And I know you keep educating yourself. What's been valuable to you? You keep educating yourself. You go to courses. You get certified. Like, what's been great?
I'm self-motivated, which a lot of people are not.
But network, like learn, meet people like this.
Yes, just come talk to me. Like, I talk to anybody.
Talk to people who you want to be like. Yeah. Pick their brains. Ask as many questions as you can. Ask all of us questions. Never stop learning. Read books. Listen to podcasts.
Also, know your worth.
What? Definitely.
Wild.
Yeah, I started as a bartender for Monday Night Brewing, and the best advice that I have is be annoying as shit. Ask your manager nonstop when that promotion's coming and what you could do to get to that position. You just have to ask.
Anybody else? We really, really appreciate you all being here. Have a great rest of CBC.